In the stifling heat of a township afternoon, four men sit drinking warm beer in silence. The youngest, known only as Tsotsi, leans forward with fingers interlocked, knuckles white with tension. This is the gang he commands through quiet authority. Boston, the educated one with unfinished stories, Diop, slow-witted but loyal, and Butcher, whose fingers drum impatiently as he watches Tsotsi's face. When Tsotsi announces they should take one on the trains, their movement through the streets transforms the despondent afternoon into a gathering wave of terror. Shopkeepers hurriedly close, mothers snatch children inside, and even boisterous vendors fall silent as these harbingers of violence pass. Their victim has already been chosen, Gumboot Dlamini, a dignified laborer just days from returning home to his wife and infant son after a year of saving. His fatal mistakes were simple: smiling while reading his son's name in a letter, wearing a bright red tie with silver lightning bolts, and carelessly displaying his pay packet. On the overcrowded 549 train, the gang executes their plan with practiced efficiency. Diop pins Gumboot's arms while Butcher drives a sharpened bicycle spoke through his heart. As life ebbs away, Tsotsi leans in close, whispering an obscenity that ensures his victim's final expression is frozen in horror, revealing Tsotsi as more than just a killer, but an architect of destruction who corrupts even the dignity of death itself. In Suki's shabby drinking den, Boston confronts Tsotsi about their recent murder. Boston, still carrying himself like the teacher he once was, challenges Tsotsi about decency, explaining why their brutal crime made him physically ill. Throughout Boston's speech, Tsotsi appears cold and unresponsive, yet internally seethes with hatred for questions about his identity. He realizes he cannot answer basic questions about himself, his real name, age, or anything beyond fragments of memories of scavenging with other abandoned boys. The confrontation intensifies when Boston cuts his arm, explaining that something inside him bleeds whenever they hurt others. Boston's questioning grows personal, asking if Tsotsi has ever felt anything for anyone, a woman's touch, family love, even a dog's affection, each question eroding Tsotsi's carefully maintained composure. When Boston declares everyone must have a soul, Tsotsi explodes in savage violence, beating Boston so ferociously that his gang members must pull him away, revealing the desperate lengths he'll go to avoid confronting the void where his sense of self should exist. Fleeing after attacking Boston, Tsotsi wanders through the night as storm clouds gather. Boston's words haunt him. One day it's going to happen, and God help you that day, because when it comes, you won't know what to do. Beneath blue gum trees in the rain, Tsotsi spots a young woman hurrying past, clutching a shoebox and looking fearful. Recognizing her terror, his predatory instincts activate. He stalks her, then pins her against a tree. As he considers his next move, something inside the shoebox makes a sound. The woman thrusts the box into his hands and escapes. When the lid slips off, Tsotsi stares at a baby's face. Small and black and older than anything he had ever seen in his life, lined and wrinkled with an age beyond years. This unexpected encounter forces Tsotsi to confront everything he's been running from. The helpless baby represents all he's rejected about himself, everything buried beneath his violent exterior. Something shifts within him. Not a traumatic transformation, but the first crack in his defensive wall. When Tsotsi enters Ramadula General Dealer, Kasim immediately identifies him as one of those slim, cool types of the street corners and the dice rings, the Shabin boys, the bad eggs. After hesitant attempts, Tsotsi asks for baby milk, determined despite his embarrassment. In his room, he tends to the infant hidden in the shoebox, cleaning him, feeding him condensed milk, and wrapping him in a shirt. He places the box in a sheltered corner of nearby ruins from forced relocations. Sitting there, Tsotsi questions why he took the baby, an action disrupting his violent pattern. A painful memory surfaces, a yellow dog crawling toward him in agony. This marks the beginning of Tsotsi confronting his buried past. His transformation unfolds gradually, not suddenly. His first acts of care are clumsy yet compelling. The baby awakens something dormant, his capacity for connection. Later, when following disabled Maris Chabalala with murderous intent, Maris reveals his profound desire to live. After long hesitation, Tsotsi realizes, I don't have to kill him. His first conscious moral choice, recognizing violence as optional, not inevitable. Returning to the ruins, Tsotsi finds ants swarming over the barely alive baby. Instead of abandoning it, he kills the ants, moves the box to safety, and tends to the infant. When the tiny fingers grasp his own, Tsotsi experiences feeling for the baby, a moment of profound connection. Desperate, he forces his way into Miriam Ngidi's room, a young mother. Threatening her child, he demands she nurse the injured baby. Though initially revolted, Miriam cleans and feeds the baby while condemning its absent mother as worse than a bitch in a backyard, words that deeply frighten Tsotsi. That night, a buried memory surfaces, a boy named David listening to his mother's song that created absolute safety. This unlocks Tsotsi's past. As David Madondo, he lived with his mother until police took her away. He eventually fled, joining homeless children by the river. When asked his name, he whispered David once, then declared it dead. Later, when called at Tsotsi, he adopted this as his new identity, a protective shell for survival. In his final days, Tsotsi brings the battered Boston to his room and shares his stories. Boston notices light where darkness had been. You are changing, Tsotsi, Boston whispers. You mustn't be frightened. It happens, man. The next morning, something has shifted within Tsotsi. Remembering Miriam's words, come back, Tsotsi, he thinks, my name is David Madondo. Speaking this aloud prompts a milk delivery man to say, peace, my brother, to which David responds in kind. He hears bulldozers in the distance. The white township, impatient with squatters rebuilding, has sent them to completely raze the buildings. David runs toward the sound, shouting, no, stop! He jumps through ruins, reaching the wall where the baby is hidden just as it begins to crack. He dives for the corner, but the wall collapses on him. When unearthed minutes later, everyone remarks on his beautiful smile, strange for a Tsotsi, despite the fatal damage to his head. In this final moment, David completes his transformation. His sacrifice represents the reclamation of his humanity and capacity for love. Fugard's novel transcends its apartheid-era setting to speak universal truths about trauma, identity, and redemption. Through Tsotsi's journey from predator to protector, we witness the human spirit's resilience, a reminder that even in dehumanizing systems, compassion remains our most profound act of resistance.